Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At-Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At-Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
You're listening to Eye on the Community. I'm Vicki Pepper. The annual financial impact of autoimmune conditions has pushed into the hundreds of billions of dollars, and people shouldn't have to choose between buying groceries and paying for their medications when effective, less expensive alternatives may be available. On the line with me is patient advocate Julia Shopik, author of The Power of Honest Medicine. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm delighted to be here, Vicki.
In Honest Medicine, you write about four treatments for life-threatening diseases that doctors don't recommend to their patients. Treatments you believe should and would be the standard of care if Big Pharma didn't dictate doctors' prescribing decisions. Why is your book just about one of them?
A great question. The first book, Honest Medicine, as you just pointed out, was about four treatments, and all of them I really believe are very, very important treatments. And I can briefly tell you they are Silverlon for wound healing. And that one, by the way, Vicki, saved my husband's life when he was a brain tumor patient many years ago, and doctors were not interested in learning about it. The other three were the ketogenic diet for pediatric epilepsy, a fascinating, fascinating treatment. As you know, the ketogenic diet is now all over the place, you know, for people who want to lose weight. And then there was intravenous alpha-lipoic acid for liver disease and autoimmune diseases as well. And then, finally, there was low-dose naltrexone. And low-dose naltrexone for autoimmune diseases, I was surprised, frankly. I think you know from the materials I sent you that radio is my favorite way of promoting, getting the word out about important treatments. And what I found, Vicki, was that most people were very, very interested in the low-dose naltrexone. Then I began to learn more, and I find out I know why, because it's like autoimmune diseases are just growing and growing and growing. There are now well over 100 of them that have been defined. And more people, this is the important thing, are not being helped by the treatments that their doctors are prescribing. And their doctors are prescribing very toxic treatments in many cases. In many cases, they're injectables. You know the ads you hear about Humira and Enbrel? I hope I don't get in trouble with the pharmaceutical companies, but it's true. They're very expensive, and they often don't work. And so I found that people were most interested in low-dose naltrexone of the four treatments I wrote about. And in Honest Medicine, I had included, as I told you, low-dose naltrexone, but all of these stories were contributed by people with multiple sclerosis. And the reason for that was that in the beginning, multiple sclerosis was the autoimmune disease that most people were taking LDN for. But I began to hear about people with lupus and people with fibromyalgia, people with chronic fatigue, Crohn's, irritable bowel, oh, God, psoriasis, rheumatoid arthritis, on and on and on, who were having good success with low-dose naltrexone. So I finally said, you know, I guess it's time for another book. And with this one, I made it all about low-dose naltrexone. And here's the other thing, Vicki. I found that there were people all over the world who were taking low-dose naltrexone for their autoimmune diseases. And I became active on Facebook with a lot of these groups, even though I couldn't speak the languages, you know, the German group and the group in the Netherlands and all of that. So I turned to Facebook, and I got people, I said, I'm writing another book, this one all about low-dose naltrexone. And people started coming out of the woodwork. We'd love to tell our stories. And so I have 18 stories of people, this is in the power of Honest Medicine, 18 stories of people who have used LDN, low-dose naltrexone, for a variety of conditions from a variety of countries. And that is why I chose to have a book totally about low-dose naltrexone. I hope I've answered your question.
In your book, Honest Medicine, you coined the term patient evidence-based medicine to describe the treatments you write about. What does this term mean exactly, and why do you use it to describe LDN?
I use it to describe all the treatments I write about, and LDN, of course. The reason is people, especially doctors, usually will say, oh, well, that's just anecdotal, and it isn't. The thing is that, to me, anecdotal is something worked on one person, and they have a story about it. I'll give you an example. Say I have an itchy nose, and I rub an onion on my itchy nose, and I say, oh, my goodness, the itch disappeared. That is anecdotal, okay? That was one person who tried one thing, and it worked. But this, all of the treatments I write about, and I'm careful to do this, they're science-based. They all have small studies that were done on them. And by the way, Vicki, pharmaceutical companies are the ones that do most of our studies. I don't know if your audience knows that, but they're not interested in doing studies about inexpensive treatments. And so I coined the phrase patient evidence-based medicine to describe treatments that really, really have science behind them. And even more important, patient evidence behind them. In the case of all of these treatments, there are thousands, even millions of people on these treatments who are taking these treatments. And now, I mean, for instance, the ketogenic diet, loads of kids are on it for epilepsy. And the same with low-dose naltrexone. That's why I call it patient evidence-based. To me, that gives it more respect. I do not think the word anecdotal is very respectful, so that's my reason.
In The Power of Honest Medicine, you write that while social media, especially Facebook, has been responsible for getting the word out about LDN, you feel that for LDN to become a household name, the mainstream media needs to play a more important role than it now plays in getting the word out about treatments like LDN. But in the U.S., that's not likely to happen. Your most powerful example of how the media could, and you feel should, educate the public about LDN concerns Norway rather than the U.S. Tell us about that.
This was, I laugh because it's a great story. As I told you, in the time between Honest Medicine and The Power of Honest Medicine, I became aware of and friends with people from all over the world. And one of my favorites, and many of them contributed their stories to The Power of Honest Medicine. My favorite, as you just pointed out, was Frank Melhus. And I believe I'm pronouncing his name correctly. He tells the story in The Power of Honest Medicine, first of all, how low-dose naltrexone helped him. And this is why he wanted to tell his story in the book. But it's more powerful than that. It goes to show you what media can do. Here's what happened. Frank Melhus was suffering from something called optic neuritis. And optic neuritis is often a precursor. It comes before people who get multiple sclerosis. And what his job was, Frank's job, was as the videographer, the man who made documentaries for the largest station. I'm sure it's a small station being Norway, but the largest station and TV station in Norway, TV2. And he decided, first of all, he was given treatments by the doctors that were not working. And optic neuritis, he was losing his vision. And this is terrible for somebody who makes documentaries. I mean, can you imagine? And he told me, I used to love pharmaceuticals, but they weren't working for me. So he began to do research. And what he found was that there were lots of people in Norway who were getting help with low-dose naltrexone and in other countries as well. So he decided to try to get it prescribed. And like all the people in both of my books, he had a hard time getting it prescribed in the beginning. And finally, he found a doctor who would prescribe it for him. And believe it or not, miraculously, his vision started to come back. And he was like, oh, my God, we've got to tell this story on TV. So he went to, you know, here he was making documentaries. He wanted to make a documentary about LDN, right? So he goes to his bosses, and they say, no, not enough science behind it. And by the way, that's not true, Vicki. There is science behind low-dose naltrexone. But he said, no, that's not what I want to tell in my documentary. I want to tell people's stories. And so they finally relented. I think he's a very persuasive guy. And he did this documentary. And the way he tells the story in The Power of Honest Medicine is just wonderful, because you have to know him to know that he is a modest human being. But the night that it was on, he said to himself, I'm the most powerful man in Norway. you know, because he knew this documentary was going to be out within minutes. And it played. And believe it or not, it changed the prescribing habits of all of Norway. There were only 300 people before who had been on low-dose naltrexone. After it aired, it shot up, like he calls it, like a tsunami, to 15,000. And now more than 75% of the general doctors, not so the neurologists, by the way, now prescribe low-dose naltrexone. So the point I'm making is that I really think that the mainstream media in this country, because it's controlled by pharma and big business and all of that, the most powerful advertisers in this country are pharmaceutical companies. And so therefore, you couldn't get a documentary on TV so easily that is about a treatment like low-dose naltrexone. And it just has meant the world to people in Norway. They can now get LDN easily. So I wish that this country were more open, but thank God for the internet. There are over 30 Facebook groups devoted to low-dose naltrexone. Let that sink in, huh? Some of them are general, like God Endorphins LDN is one. Another one is the LDN Research Trust. But then there are also disease-specific Facebook groups, people with fibromyalgia, for people with chronic fatigue, for people with thyroid, Hashimoto's. And they're also the ones that I was telling you about in other countries. Norway, of course, Italy, Germany, France, Netherlands, and Finland, on and on and on. So thank God for the internet, because it really is getting the word out. I just wish that mainstream media would also start doing its job better, especially television.
I'm speaking with Julia Shopik, author of Honest Medicine and the Power of Honest Medicine. Can you give us some background about how LDN was developed?
Yeah, it's a fascinating story, as are the stories of all of the treatments in Honest Medicine. But the story is that a man named Bernard Bihari, he was, by the way, a double board certified doctor in psychiatry and neurology. He was working with drug addicts, and this was in the 70s that this all started, you know, that he was working with drug addicts. He was very, very, very well-regarded. He, in New York, he was head of the methadone programs in New York. He was very, very well-regarded and very high-powered. And he was working, as I said, with drug addicts, and this drug called naltrexone, not low-dose naltrexone, but naltrexone, was FDA approved at 50, that's 50 milligrams, for the treatment of drug addiction. It was FDA approved in 1984 for drug addicts and in 1994 for alcoholics. And the idea was that it would block opioid receptors, and it would therefore make it so that the people who were addicted would not crave either the drug, in the case of heroin, or alcohol. And Dr. Bihari, being a very innovative doctor, was very interested in trying this for his patients with heroin addiction. So he did. And by the way, doctors were prescribing it at sometimes 100 milligrams and 150 milligrams, but it was, as I said, FDA approved at 50. So he prescribed it for some of his addicts. And he found that indeed it did block the desire for getting high. But unfortunately, the high dose was toxic. He found that it just, or can I say, it made people jumpy. It made them so that they just couldn't tolerate it. But he found that it was also, you know, at this time, there was an unnamed disease that was later defined as HIV and AIDS that a lot of these people had. And he found that when they were taking this naltrexone, it did help their HIV/AIDS. So he said, you know what? I can't prescribe it at the high dose. I just can't do that to my patients. So let me see if what happens, how low I can get it, titrate it down, and still get the good effect, the healing effects of this drug, naltrexone. So he was able to do it, and he would test it at every point. He finally got it down to, I think it was 3 milligrams, and it was still having the good effects, but not the bad effects. And so he was giving it to his people with HIV and AIDS, but then a friend of his daughter's came to him. She had multiple sclerosis, and this was in the 80s, and there was no FDA-approved medicine for multiple sclerosis. So she said to her friend's father, Dr. Bahari, I wonder if this would work for me. He said, why not try it? So he did. And her MS, the symptoms started disappearing or getting better, getting appreciably better. And the word started spreading. This was before the internet days, but there were pencil and paper, and there was also the telephone, and people started talking to each other. Hey, it works for MS. And as I said in the beginning, MS patients were the ones who were spreading the word first. But he also found that it was working for people with lupus, for chronic fatigue, for fibromyalgia, for all, and some cancers, by the way. And then it just started to grow. And by the way, it's not funny what I'm about to tell you, but Dr. Bahari, I told you how he was very, very well regarded and a famous researcher and all of that. And all of his studies that were done would get published in some of the major medical publications, but not when he was writing about LDN, low-dose naltrexone. But you know what? He just was happy prescribing it to people, and that was his mission for the rest of his life. He died in 2010. And by the way, his widow, Jackie Young Bahari, wrote the foreword to The Power of Honest Medicine. I was honored to have her. She's now a friend. And I was honored to have her write about it. She tells, oh, it's wonderful, Vicki. She tells all the hardships he had getting the word out. People who had respected his work before then, not wanting to talk about this low-dose naltrexone because it was outside-the-box kind of treatment. But now there are over 1,000 doctors worldwide who will prescribe it. But that does not mean that your doctor will want to prescribe it. Crystal Nason, one of the patient advocates for LDN, for low-dose naltrexone, has put together a list. We cannot send the list out, but I can if people write to me or to Crystal. If they write to me at julie@honestmedicine.com and tell me what condition they have and where they live, what state, I can send them, and so can Crystal, the names and addresses and phone numbers of doctors who will prescribe it. So it's much easier now than it was before.
And how does LDN work?
This is the thing that I'm not sure people know exactly. The rule of thumb is, as I said, that it blocks the opioid receptors. And I guess let me explain how Dr. David Gluck describes it in Honest Medicine. And if people want me to send them David Gluck's chapter, I've made it so that I can send single chapters from Honest Medicine out to people. He describes it beautifully when he says that it tricks the body. What it does, it makes the immune system work correctly, and it tricks the body into producing endorphins. You know those endorphins that make you feel good? And that's what it does. So I can send people his chapter. It's a beautiful chapter, as all of them are. And by the way, there are different interpretations. It also reduces inflammation. And by the way, there are, I know you didn't ask this question yet, but there are tons of studies that are being done. And there's a website, LDNscience.org, that actually lists all of the studies that are done for all the different conditions. Oh, my God, they're being done for pain and fibromyalgia. Some very famous studies were done at Stanford. And, oh, my goodness, Penn State did studies on Crohn's. Jill Smith at Penn State. And, by the way, Jared Younger at Stanford, and Bruce Cree did a study at the University of California, San Francisco, UCSF, and he did it for multiple sclerosis, so that you can find out about it now. But that's the closest to how it works, and both of my books have doctors describing scientifically more how it works, but that's the basic.
In your book, The Power of Honest Medicine, you point out that most people with autoimmune diseases are on several medications at once, which combine to put a terrible financial strain on our healthcare system. Once they find LDN, though, these patients often no longer need many of those medications. Do you think this can apply to the many meds so many other U.S. patients are taking today?
Yeah. You know what? I kind of use it in my thinking to say that there are things out there, these pharmaceuticals, what's wrong is that people are being put, I mean, I know that you know this and your listeners know this, senior citizens are on 10 to 15 routinely at a time. And usually they have several specialists they're going to, and one medication will be given for the side effects of another medication. And by the way, this is my feeling, and not only mine, but many people, that this is what is breaking our healthcare system. Well, you know, the people in Washington know it, but they always say that they want to reduce the prices of what they call life-saving medications. And I want to get to some of them and say, you know what? Yes, a lot of medications are life-saving. For instance, insulin or the EpiPen. Oh, my God, my nephew, if he didn't have the EpiPen for asthma, I mean, he might have died, you know, as a kid. But a lot of them are just being given. You know, you walk into a doctor's office and you say, I'm feeling, and you say, you know, like tired, or I'm feeling, I have pain, or, and what does the doctor do? Brings out the prescription pad right away. And I think that this is a big reason why we're going downhill with the price of medicines. And I wish that the politicians wouldn't keep saying that they're all necessary and we got to bring down the prices. Many of these drugs are not necessary. As you just pointed out, Vicki, when you talked about how a lot of people who take LDN don't need a lot of the medications they're on. So, yeah, I think it's kind of a story that goes across all kinds of conditions. But autoimmune, my God, I guess one of the reasons why autoimmune, I'm so passionate about it, is the doctors don't know what to do with autoimmune except to keep piling more meds on.
What are the side effects of LDN, and how do those side effects compare with those of conventional medications for autoimmune diseases?
Well, the conventional ones, let's start with that and scare people, but I don't mean that. I was being facetious. A lot of them have terrible, terrible side effects. One of them, Tysabri, and there are a few of them that have a brain infection called PML. It stands for a long blah, 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 blah term. But PML is a brain infection that can kill people and often does. And a lot of these medications have terrible side effects. Do you listen to drug ads on TV? Because the drug ads will say, especially with these biologics, Humira and Enbrel and all of them, they will say side effects include, and they'll talk about pain at the injection site, but then they end with or a brain infection or a cancer or, you know. And that's, to me, it's kind of a risk when you're taking these. They're very, very expensive, but also very toxic, very bad side effects, a lot of them. Some of them not so bad, but a lot of them bad. Oh, one of them with a friend of mine was on Lyrica for fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue, and she ended up gaining 100 pounds, you know? I'm laughing, but it's not so funny. She couldn't lose it. And LDN, you asked about the side effects of that. Vivid dreams. My mom was on LDN. She died at 102 last year, 102 years of age. But she was on LDN because she had a chronic kind of cancer. And she took it, and she called me up, and she goes, I'm enjoying my dreams so much, you know. So that is the main side effect. And what people are finding in The Power of Honest Medicine, one person, Kathy Hsu, who takes it for psoriasis, who takes low-dose naltrexone, she found that she was getting the vivid dreams and inability to sleep. So she takes it in the morning with very good results. So which would you rather have, vivid dreams or a brain infection? You know, I think the answer is pretty clear, right?
Why do most doctors tend to prescribe medications that are the standard of care, even if they don't work very well?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question, isn't it? Because one of my friends, who's also a radio host, was saying, standard of care. He put it this way when he was asking me a similar question. Standard of care. Doesn't that sound like it's a wonderful thing? And I said, yeah, it does sound like that. But that's not what standard of care means. What standard of care means, when they say this drug is the standard of care, it's what most of the doctors in your area, in your geographical area, would tend to prescribe for a particular condition. So it doesn't mean that it's the best or always good. It just means it's what most doctors do. And that's what standard means. It doesn't mean wonderful. Oh, here's the other thing, Vicki. I don't know what the problem is, but they say they're afraid of being sued. But I don't think people are going to sue somebody for something that works. Or in cases, I didn't mean to make it sound like LDN or any of the other treatments I write about work for everyone. They don't. But they don't cause harm like a lot of these drugs do. They don't cause terrible side effects and awful things like that. So why do doctors prescribe it? Doctors tend, there's a wonderful chapter in Honest Medicine. I wish people, you know, if people would like me to send them that chapter, I can. It's by Dr. Bert Berkson, the doctor who is the intravenous alpha-lipoic acid pioneer. And he writes a chapter about, in Honest Medicine, how doctors are trained and not educated. And that's a powerful difference, because training means, like in the Army, you follow a certain procedure, right? Educated means looking outside the box, questioning, learning not by rote. And most doctors just don't do that. And they will basically do, I don't mean to make them sound like children, but they'll do what the others do. And to me, oh boy, when I find a doctor, and there are more these days, so I don't mean to sound like I'm complaining, but most of them are not looking outside the box. There are more and more today who are, though, thank goodness. It is easier now to get these treatments. In the case of something like the ketogenic diet, though, there has to be a hospital in the geographical area that is doing the ketogenic diet, because it must be started. This is for kids with epilepsy, not for people who just want to lose weight, you know? Mm-hmm. But for kids with epilepsy, they have to start it in the hospital because it's calibrated to each individual child. So that's a roundabout answer. But I sure wish that doctors did not always prescribe the standard of care, because it doesn't mean it's great. It's a great treatment. It doesn't.
I've been speaking with patient advocate Julia Shopik, author of Honest Medicine and the Power of Honest Medicine. Julia, how can people get more information on LDN?
I'm going to be boring here, because my website is honestmedicine.com, and they can also go to LDNResearchTrust.org. Let me say that slowly. LDNResearchTrust.org. That is Linda Elsegood's site, and she is in the UK, in England, and she has amassed a huge amount of information. Oh my God. Linda puts on seminars, symposia, almost every year, every 2 years, I believe, in all parts of the world on low-dose naltrexone. And there's another one I can never forget to tell, this one. It's ldninfo.org. And that one is David Glucks. Remember I talked about him writing a chapter in Honest Medicine? Well, he was Dr. Bahari's best friend, and he has the website ldninfo.org. There's also ldnscience.org. There are a lot of books. Linda Elsegood has written a book. I've written two books, Honest Medicine and the Power of Honest Medicine. And there's just a lot of information out there about it.
Julia Shopik, thank you so much for chatting with me today.
My pleasure. As you know, I love talking about the treatments that I write about. So I enjoyed it myself. I hope your listeners do too. And they may write to me at julia@honestmedicine.com if they want to.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.